All right, very good. And I just learned something interesting. It's not closed captioning. It is open captioning.
Oh, well, so there captioning.
You have it. And it's working. Is that correct, Carla?
They've got you now, yes.
Very good. Thank you. Go ahead, Eric. Sorry for the interruption.
No problem. I'll just pick up where I left off. If households who are most dependent on transit are displaced out of the corridor, they could be pushed into areas with much less frequent transit, put into cars, and contribute to congestion and carbon emissions with the resulting loss of ridership for the transit system. So the housing strategy is not only about housing, but it's also important for the success of the transit investment itself. We want to get ahead of the predictable cycle of real estate speculation and market pressures to help ensure there are new housing choices available when light rail comes. In 2016, Council directed us to develop a housing strategy in relation to the light rail project. We teamed up with the City of Tigard to develop a unified strategic approach to housing for the entire Southwest Corridor. At last month's work session, you heard about the corridor's housing needs and the goals that we are proposing. Today, you'll hear how we will work with our partners to meet our goals, and I'll turn it over to Ryan to introduce some of the project partners.
Thank you, Eric. So with this resolution, we are affirming the city's commitment to equitable growth. We're adopting this housing strategy and directing bureaus to begin implementation. And I want to pause and just take a moment to thank Susan Anderson. Today's her last day as the director of BPS, and she created a lot of the space and resources to do this work and help call these important questions, and just want to acknowledge that. Today's work, we should recognize how much of a team effort this will be. So our community partners are here to share why this is the right approach and what role they will play in implementation. You'll hear from them next. The bureaus taking a leadership role in implementation are here to describe the actions they will take. You will also hear from our jurisdictional partners who will describe how they are contributing to the housing solution. We'll have some public testimony and council discussion, and then council can take action. We'd like to start today's hearing by acknowledging our partners. There's an endorsement letter from our advisor group. It's included in the final strategy, which you can find in your binder. I want to thank them for the many long hours of work sessions and community engagement that they did to help develop this body of work. In addition, many other individual organizations and commissions weighed in and submitted letters of support. Those are on the record today, and I have copies here for reference. And you'll hear from a number of them as well. So now we will hear from a few of our community partners. I'll introduce them as they come up to the table. Alan Lazo, the Executive Director of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. We have Rachel Duke, the Executive Director of the Community Partners for Affordable Housing. Pam Fan is the Policy and Advocacy Director for the Community Alliance of Tenants. And with her is Amina Omar, a Southwest Community Tenant Leader.
And very good. Thank you.
Turn it over to Alan.
Welcome.
Thank you, and good afternoon. I'm Alan Lazo, the Executive Director at the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. And as you know, I come before you on many different occasions and talk about many different issues, but I'm particularly proud to be a part of this effort, and especially because it's an effort to address early on these systemic, institutional, and even market forces that come into play in large public infrastructure investments like the Southwest Corridor. So for us as an organization that's dedicated to eliminating discrimination in housing and promoting housing justice and ensuring access to housing throughout the state of Oregon, as an organization, we strongly support the work that's being done through the Southwest Corridor Equitable Housing Strategy. This investment is a big opportunity for us to advance the obligations, the duties, and the commitment that we have as a city and a community to fair housing throughout our region, and address also some of the past harms that we've seen in communities through large public infrastructure investment. We all are aware of the history of racial discrimination and exclusion in and around areas like the Southwest Corridor. The areas in South Portland, for instance, that are a long part of the preferred alignment were redlined in the 1930s and 40s, while neighborhoods in some of the Southwest Hills near there had private racially restrictive deed covenants that restricted and denied the opportunity for people of color to own homes within the corridor. This history continues to have disparities for these communities today. And when we look at those racial disparities, they are in housing cost burden, in wealth gap, home ownership gaps, as well as income throughout the corridor and throughout the region. So we know that public investments now coming online in this area must be made with the explicit goals of addressing this unjust history. We need to work to determinedly eliminate and specifically eliminate these disparities and create better outcomes for all the people in our communities. We have an opportunity right now, which doesn't come along very often, to undo a past history and do the right thing moving forward. We know that buying land for future affordable housing and purchasing existing apartment buildings, other housing, naturally occurring affordable housing in those areas throughout the corridor and the preferred alternative will help preserve affordability and opportunity and should be our top priorities in this strategy. These types of capital investments must also, though, be paired with specific new tenant protections and services in ways that can help, again, preserve opportunity for communities that are both in place and also seeking to access opportunity in this corridor. You know, specifically, again, we hope to see targeted education, the kind of work that we do as an organization to educate and do outreach to folks about these issues, as well as enforcement of current fair housing laws in the corridor as these displacement pressures, again, that are systemic, institutional, and market, rise with this large public infrastructure investment we see there. So as an organization, I thank you and commend you all for the leadership role that you play here at the local level, and also thank you for the foresight on the issues of fair housing and transit equity that this investment can make. If you and our regional partners follow through on these commitments in the Southwest Corridor Equitable Housing Strategy, you will set a new model for foresight in housing equity, and we look forward to following your progress on that. So thank you all very much.
Thank you, Alan. We appreciate it. Thanks for the great work you do.
Thank you.
Great. Hi, I'm Rachel Duke. Hi. I'm the Executive Director at Community Partners for Affordable Housing. We are a community housing development organization, and we serve this whole area, and I'll talk about that in a second, along the corridor. But I also want to say personally it's pretty fun to be here today, having had so much time working in Multnomah County and the city of Portland, and having now the opportunity to really understand how, as a region, we are all connected. And after doing work in Multnomah County and now really doing a lot of work in Washington County, I feel like I understand that on a whole new level. So I just want to put that out there, too, that this is an amazing opportunity for us to look at with a regional effort. Community Housing, Community Partners for Affordable Housing starts with a senior property in Hillsdale. We go. Much of our housing is located along the Southwest Corridor. It ends right now with the senior housing project in Tigard. We have a lot of family housing in between, and we're currently working on a permanent supportive housing project in the Tigard Triangle. So, and that's been financed, so now we're just starting with the whole permit process. And Sean Farrelly is here, so I'll probably bend his ear later before I leave. So I wanted to say we're super committed and super excited about this opportunity. We had the opportunity to participate not just in the Southwest Housing Strategy, the Equitable Housing Strategy, which was a great process and which came up, as you know, with a number of excellent recommendations. But we also, I also had the opportunity to be a member of the Community Advisory Committee that looked at kind of what the locally preferred option should be for the light rail. So I feel like I really have, based on those two processes, some good insight on the interconnection between transit and housing, and in particular, our focus, which is affordable housing. We know how important it is to be sure that folks who are currently living along the corridor can benefit from this incredible upcoming public investment. At the same time, we know that we're expecting another 10,000 people along the corridor by 2035. So with those things in mind, it just really, really speaks to the importance of having this strategy adopted. So I'm going to say kind of three things that I'm excited to ask about and want to thank you ahead of time for your leadership on these things. One is to be sure that we are tying up land now and prioritizing it for housing, and in particular affordable housing. As Alan already mentioned, and as you know, this is our moment. This is our time to make that investment so that we can benefit from that investment for years and years to come. And the longer we wait, the harder that investment is to make because it becomes more expensive. live. We want to create an urban renewal area along the Portland portion of the corridor. I know that Tigard has set aside some urban renewal areas in the Triangle and downtown Tigard as well. And in the Portland area have a set aside, a large set aside for affordable housing. And then fund the request from the community-based organizations active in the corridor to continue to engage low-income households. Super important for folks to be represented in coming up with the strategies and the solutions to make sure that their lives are rich and have all those things in it that we all want. Good place to live, access to opportunities, ways to grow, all of it. Housing is foundational to that. So again, thank you very much for your leadership. It's really, really great to be here today representing a new organization. Thanks.
Thank you for being here, Rachel. We appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Commissioners, my name is Pam Fawn. I'm with the Community Alliance of Tenants and want to thank you for your time. And I want to share with you, I get the pleasure and the amazing job of working with community members to express themselves and to assert their rights along the corridor. So we partnered with the City of Portland's Bureau of Planning and Sustainability as a response to our need to create inclusive conversations and be able to lift the voices that are invisible in our planning projects through that we had advocated for through the city's comprehensive plan. So we're really appreciative that the city heard us and that we're actually actively doing those things. But there's a next step to that. So in partnership with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, we were able to do a Southwest Corridor leadership cohort with renters. We were able to center the questions around housing and housing needs around folks who are probably most vulnerable to changes in shifts in the market. And that's, of course, renters, and particularly low-income renters, or folks on fixed incomes, folks with disabilities. And again, these identities are mixed, right? It's not one individual person that is one thing, like one, they're just a refugee, but they also could be disabled. They also could be a single parent, right? So there's a multiplicity of vulnerability that's happening, and you only know until you talk to people. So we had a chance to do a cohort. It was a 3-month process where we met every other month and we recruited families and individuals along the corridor. So I want to share that we worked together to come up with some community-based solutions. And there are three basic categories of those community-based solutions, essentially preservation. So what both Alan and Rachel have said in terms of really acquiring and thinking through what land is available and starting to plan that out and actually consider numbers of units, that's what we want to do as early and awesome and preserve often as possible and preserve the units that currently people live in. So, and then next is this piece around community voice and ensuring that community members are consistently a part of this process. We want to ensure that folks who are a part of our cohort, and they'll get a chance to share with you in a second, that they are actually influencing the process. And then lastly, it's this piece around costs in housing and costs in transportation, is that what are we doing to ensure that programs, services, and efforts across the region are ensuring that people stay in place and that costs are not astronomical and going out of control? And so those are the main solutions that the community members came up with and through the cohort process. And we wanted to share those with you. But one thing that is really critical is that CAT and our other community-based partners will continue to be at this table regardless of what decisions are made to ensure that community voices are at the center of the conversation. We feel like the plan is a good direction and it's a good place to start, and we'd like to see more, right? We know that this crisis is so much deeper than one plan can resolve. And so we will continue to push for better and more. So thank you very much for the time, and I want to introduce Amina.
Hi, my name is Amina Omar, and thank you for having us here today. I'm mother of 4 children, so my main thing for my kids is to have a home, a safe home, and a safe environment, and that's the reason why we're here today. So I'm talking about the reason we're here today to talk about is rent increasing. I live in Portland for like 13 years, and my first apartment I rented out was $675, but right now the same apartment is $1,300. It's almost double. So it's like my main concern is rent increasing every single day because, you know, we live in check to check every single daily. So and our wage are not increased, but the rent is increasing. Like, I just talked to one of my friends who's a single mother, and she was just telling me, like, this month, it was the hardest month ever because she couldn't even buy grocery for her child because she has to pay, like, $1,300. Like, all her check has to go towards the rent. So she was like, I don't know if I'm going to make it the next year. I'm like, you know, just have a hope. You will make it. You will survive, and you'll make it. But it's really, it's true in our area. The rent is increasing every single year. That's the main thing that we have. And we hope that you guys could, you know, work with something and just maybe fix the rates. Just kind of like to have like maybe 30 years just in one, instead of every year increasing the rent. Mm-hmm. But just kind of have like a long term. So for those people, like my friend who's a single mother, could buy food for a child and could buy other things. And it's really difficult and it's really hard for her. And so for so many people, and also that we like the area that we're in, it's a southwest area, and we like there because our kids go to schools where they're familiar with their friends, with their like, you know, peers, and also we have a mosque that's very close to us, and our community, we're all kind of like familiar, we're all comfortable over there. We're not like, you know, going to the other area single, nobody's singling us out because we're all in the same, you know, comfortable area, comfortable zone, basically. So we're there like a, it's like a home to us.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. Commissioner Fish, and then Commissioner Fritz, and then Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question for Alan and Rachel, and you may have similar answers, so you don't have to do it in stereo, but I want to put the question out there. We have a housing crisis, and we're approaching it through multiple strategies. The mayor has taken the unprecedented step of taking all development-related bureaus under his portfolio. So from the moment an idea is hatched to the ribbon cutting, he has all the bureaus that touch that project, and he has said that he wants to see a streamlining of the permit process. He wants to see affordable housing go to the head of the line. He wants to see more concierge services. He wants to look at ways of reducing fees and other barriers. So that's a huge step forward, and the mayor has said even hold me accountable for those changes. I think the closest we ever came to that was when almost all the development bureaus, related bureaus, reported to Commissioner then Kefouri, who had at least three of the five. So that's a positive development. I'm very active in both measures 102 and 26199. One of the things we've learned in conversations with sister counties is that not all of us have the same suite of benefits that we offer to induce development. So, for example, in Washington County, they don't have SDC waivers. They are now actively looking at ways of reducing the burden of SDCs, systems development charges, to streamline the development. That's a very productive conversation. There's lots of things that we can do to streamline the process. But I want to ask you this. We're also hearing from particularly some editorial boards, but others, that we should compromise on our values around this housing that's part of our equity agenda. And it goes something like this. We should not necessarily put opportunity at the forefront if we can build it cheaper in places where dirt is cheaper. We should find ways of working with Boley and the state labor commissioner to reduce costs. There is an ongoing discussion about whether prevailing wage adds too much. In other words, paying people who build the housing enough money so they don't have to actually live in the housing, that they can have other choices. We are told that some of our sustainability goals add unnecessary costs. And we are told that you can build short-term housing that has to be refinanced and rebuilt rather than long-term housing with 60 and 90-year covenants. And in an emergency, sometimes you build cheap for the short-term, not the long-term. So I would just want to give each of you an opportunity to advise us as to whether, in thinking about an equitable housing strategy for the Southwest Corridor, which is a big deal, whether we should be compromising on those values.
So if I might, I'll start. Because as you know, I don't actually work in the affordable housing area, so I'm not actually going to address the affordable issue. The area I work in is around equity and addressing that. And so when we talk about housing in that context, I think we have to talk about opportunity. And in that context, I think that we need to focus on just what I said in my statement. We need to focus on very specific remedies to a history that has denied opportunity to many in our communities and has the potential to do so again. You know, we have some very clear history here in our community of involuntary economic displacement as a result of large public infrastructure investments. And we ought to pay heed to that. You know, I will never sit here, I'll never come before you and tell you that there is one solution to this. You know, one of the things I tell people about gentrification and displacement is it's a extraordinarily complex issue. People ask me, who solved it around the country? And I think the answer is no one, because it is a set of very complex local issues that need to be sorted out. And so we shouldn't ignore that. And one of the things we shouldn't do is ignore that there might be some opportunities that we need to create at the expense of other things. So that's the answer I have for you about the perspective we have as an organization, that we need to focus on creating those opportunities in a place like the Southwest Corridor and be purposeful about it. Otherwise, we will lose that opportunity.
And so let's be clear, when you say opportunity, you're saying building in areas where we displace people through gentrification and other strategies.
Yeah.
And the dirt is necessarily more expensive. Yes, you could replace the housing on the fringes of the community in places where the dirt is cheaper, but you'd be putting people next to schools that aren't as successful, next to business districts that aren't as well developed, next to infrastructure that isn't as built up, and you lose the dividend.
Absolutely. That's absolutely what I'm saying. So thank
and by the
you
way,
for being
also,
more eloquent.
It's also the law.
I didn't want to go there, but you're absolutely right.
Dr. Carson acknowledges that opportunity is the law.
Sometimes when I use the term we, I mean you, and we have an obligation to affirmatively further fair housing in our community. And that one recognizing that point is one of the ways we can do that. You know, one of the things I've started to say about housing is that we quite often think about housing as the roof over our heads. But we really ought to think about housing as access to opportunity out the front door. And that's really what we need to think about housing for. Not only is it shelter, it is also access to opportunity. And this kind of discussion is what that is about. What opportunities are we giving folks out the front door? That is different when we do it in a place like the Southwest Corridor versus someplace way outside of that area.
Rachel, you want to add anything?
I do. One thing I do want to say is actually we did get SDC waivers from the city of Tigard for our current project. So I just want to give them a shout out and say that Washington just
but they're looking at it now holistically.
Partly because Sean's right behind me, but also
Chair Dyke has said he wants to look at this now more holistically because historically they have not waived SDCs and we have in the city of Portland.
That's true. There's a lot more that can be done in Washington County. I'm the first to agree with you there, but I just wanted to point that out. I think when I remember taking public policy classes, where one of the first things I learned is that there's always multiple and conflicting goals whenever you do any project at all. And I feel like housing has kind of absorbed that a little bit. There are multiple and conflicting goals sometimes around issues around sustainability and an opportunity and how do we make a good solid investment that's going to last for a long time. And so maybe in some ways they're conflicting, but in other ways they're all driving towards the kind of future that we want for our community. So I guess what I would say is there may be some conflicts in terms of cost, but they're all kind of getting us to the place where we want to be. And when I think about the opportunity that we're trying to engender in our communities, it includes access to education, access to nature, access to services, access to jobs. All of that stuff is important in terms of having a good life. And housing, again, is foundational to all those things. Access to health, access to good health, all of those things. So building in a place like the corridor makes a lot of sense because it's literally the access is right there. It's right there. You're going to step out your door and you're going to have that. And then I guess the other thing I would say is nothing is cheap. Cheap isn't cheap. You have housing that wasn't built well, and in 10 years you have to rehab that housing. That is not cheap. That's actually really expensive. It's a reinvestment of funds that could have gone to new units. So I just want to say building something on the cheap is not even real. It's just putting costs off till later. And that I just want to make sure
that's
said.
Well, I'm so glad you said that. And I'll just close by acknowledging something that Commissioner Fritz has led the last few years. She has prioritized investments of systems development charge money and other capital dollars in building out a park system in undeveloped areas of our city, particularly east of 82nd. She has done it intentionally, and she's done it at the, you know, where she's had to prioritize at the expense of other very compelling projects. In all the years, though, that she led that agenda, I never remembered her coming in saying, we've come up with the cheapest and easiest path to building a park. We took a community vision, we scaled it back, we value engineered it. It's got a postage stamp dog run. It's got a surplus children's playground, and it's got a loo that was decommissioned recently, but we put some more paint on it and we put it there. I've never heard her say that, because I've never heard the community say what they wanted was us to go race to the bottom. So I appreciate your comments.
Commissioner Fish, do you mind if I answer your question around this value proposition of opportunity? I think actually the case in point, what we were able to uncover with the Southwest Corridor leadership cohort was that there's a lot of housing opportunity in apartment buildings that are currently people are renting from, in terms of they're called the naturally occurring affordable housing, and preserving those units, getting those buildings up to code, and ensuring that folks have stable rents, as Amina was saying. These are family-sized units. The complex right next to the mosque on Capitol Highway, they're three-bedroom units, right? These are actually apartments that families can continue to grow in and actually have multiple generations going to Markham Elementary across the street. So it's not a question of building new only. It's also preserving and using the infrastructure we do have.
Thank you very much.
Commissioner Fritz.
Commissioner Fish, I have to start off by saying that we also brought in all the projects on budget because of your great staff within Portland Parks and Recreation, who did that value engineering and actually was able to provide better, even more than the community asked for. So phenomenal. And also that another of the new parks is Spring Garden Park, which is just a mile from the Barber Transit Center in an area that people might not think is parks deficient, but it is, and it's going to serve everybody from the transit center. And indeed, we recently did a local improvement district from the park that'll get people down to Barbara on a sidewalk. We're so excited to have a sidewalk in the neighborhood. Thank you for participating. That's my neighborhood too, so I'm so glad to know that you find it welcoming and that it's yours also. My kids went to Markham Elementary and I live up the hill. And it wasn't necessarily that way 25 years ago. So the mosque community and the neighborhood association worked really hard and have just delighted in each other since. And so I'm really happy that you're here. Thank you for that. And kudos to the project staff and everybody who decided to give some of the contract money to the Muslim Educational Trust. When I got the Southwest Neighborhood News newsletter this month and saw that the contact information was Muslim Educational Trust and two women there, those are the folks that people are to call for with questions. I was like, yes, we're finally learning to invest in the community and invest in the organizations that are doing good work in the community. So thank you for that. My question for all of you, and also perhaps for Bureau of Planning, is about local businesses. Because I know from living in the neighborhood that when the 44 bus turns around at Barber Transit Center because it can't get up the hill in the snow, most of the businesses are still open, because not only are they locally owned, but they have local workers. And so obviously this is a housing strategy. How should it mention that we need to keep those locally owned, look after the tenancy or the ownership of those locally owned businesses as well? I have consistently hopped on about Barber World Foods, which provides culturally specific food and fresh vegetables for pretty much all the cultures that are around, which is absolutely fantastic. And I'm assured that the preferred alignment holds that particular establishment harmless. And I know neighbors who own businesses on Barber and up the hill, so how do we make sure that that gets tied into this? Because that's also about having people live and work where they can afford to do so.
So our next table of speakers, one will be Kimberly Branham from Prosper Portland, and she'll speak to that issue. Okay. And following her, Metro will be joining us and talking about their Southwest Equitable Development Strategy, which the housing strategy is nested within, but it goes further to talk about economic and workforce development.
So I teed you up nicely. Thank you very
much.
Yeah,
it's a nice segue.
For being here. Thank you for your work.
Yeah.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Yeah, I was curious, Rachel, you mentioned a funding request to support community-based organizations, so can you tell me more about that? Like who's the request to,
and I can
how
talk
much?
I can talk a minute about that, but I'm going to punt a little bit also to Pam because I think that she can also talk because you know I think that the truth is that making sure that we're reaching folks along the corridor is we want to be working with the organizations that are already there working with people along the corridor like Community Alliance of Tenants. I will say just quickly, I'm excited. One of the concepts I'm really excited about is potentially an oversight committee to make sure that once we set goals for this area that we're also, from a community perspective, keeping track of how we're doing on that and measuring them. Sometimes just setting goals can make a difference, but really knowing that you're tracking the outcomes and that you're going to be talking about how you're doing, that can make a significant difference in how well you do at achieving those goals. But I would like to punt to Pam a bit because I think she can talk about this a little bit more than me.
Okay. I think we're really excited as community-based organizations. So our initial crew of organizations were Community Alliance of Tenants, OPAL, Environmental Justice Oregon, CPAW, as well as Unite Oregon, and Momentum Alliance. So those five, as five organizations, we've been meeting for the last year to coordinate community engagement activities to ensure that community voices are being heard and then supported, right, to have those conversations, to unpack what plans are, what you know, understanding the difference between TriMet and Metro, right? This is really complicated if you don't already have 20 years, 30 years of experience or have sat on a commission before. So those are the types of training that we do, and that was what, you know, the content of the 3 months was, but also putting it in context of people's experiences. So that's the engagement work that we do. And then we add that to the plan. Hopefully you'll like what you see and you'll be able to pass it. And with that adoption, we look forward to being able to do some core work around what I was talking about with the naturally occurring affordable housing preservation work, and then also thinking about where else in the community from their community perspective in terms of they know their own neighborhoods, right? Folks know where the best investments should be made in types of programs, as well as potentially where the Housing Bureau should be concentrating time and energy, and so as well as the Planning Bureau. So I think that level, we're at this point, I think we're talking about creating a community preservation work group of these organizations, as well as working with groups like MET who are already on the ground to figure out how do we hold. A work plan for the policies moving forward, but ensure that there is high levels of influence of community members who are directly impacted and most affected by the changes in the neighborhood.
So, yeah, is there a funding request and to whom? And how much?
Yes, we'll talk a little later about the Metro grant that we are receiving to do stationary planning, which will partially fund that request, and then a BPS budget request.
You're going to talk about that later or,
yep.
or now?
It's in context to kind of implementation, and so my hope was that some of the directors from the bureaus could lay out what their work plans are and then talk about kind of how we're coordinating that all with community, which is, I think, is the question there.
So it's a Metro, Metro station area planning grants a BPS budget request?
Correct.
Okay. And I'd like to get some sense of the magnitude, I guess.
Sure. So the Metro grant was for $230,000, and we're proposing to put $50,000 aside in that budget for this work. And then I believe we have a $50,000 fall budget bump ask to round that work plan out.
And is that for a fiscal year, or is that for the duration of the project?
It is designed as seed money to get the first year and potentially a second year of kind of organizational chartering to more formalize their work together as a coalition, and then to tee up kind of a sustainability and financial long-term plan for private philanthropic support. So it's a startup funding is one way to put it, and it's an extension of the planning work we've been doing in the corridor. So it's definitely not as Pam indicated at the beginning of a relationship. It's the continuation of a relationship from planning toward implementation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Mayor. We've lost captioning again.
Oh. We'll take a recess.
Is this a good time to swap out?
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay.
Swap. Yeah,
we'll
thank you all.
Thank you.